Accession number 9476, reel number 3.
Mr. Boone, reel 2. Perhaps we could begin by describing where you were actually posted in France.
The 9th Wing was situated in a village called Fine Village. And the most important and commodious building in that village was the local chateau. And we took the chateau over. There was a farmer in residence who did some maintenance kind of duties, but we had the whole of the chateau. The ground floor, the basement was used as a mess. The first floor was used as equipment office and orderly office, and the second floor was the colonel's office and the single office, and then up in the rafters we had the sleeping accommodation.
And that was for the
whole of the personnel of the 9th Wing were operated there, and they all slept there as well in various parts of the outbuildings and the barn.
How many squadrons were in the 9th Wing?
There were 6 squadrons in the 9th Wing, to my best of recollection.
And were they situated anywhere near where you were?
There were some miles away. I was never there. I just know they were in a certain direction, but I was never at the airfield. Never on any occasion was at the air wing. The wing established adjacent to squadron. Is detached in a way of the road.
And so your duty, as it were, would be to take in all the messages from the squadron.
Our duties were essentially to operate the switchboard, to send messages verbally, accept messages verbally. Everything was written down. I forget it was a pink form, an army form. Always made, always the carbonyl. On a very special occasion, I use a 3rd carbon. I'll tell you about that later.
Could we go through your duties specifically now, do you think?
Now, every evening, after all active flying had ceased, each squadron summarised their operations and telephoned same to the orderly room HQ. The wing summarised all the squadron reports and in the evening transmitted them to the brigade headquarters.
So
this report consisted of, during the day, the reports consisted of all departures and returns of each squadron flying on patrol. These were immediately taken into the officer commandant's room and entered numerically on a progress sheet, which was a foolscap sheet ruled horizontally, which indicated the departure and return or non-return of each aeroplane, of each particular aeroplane. And also on the form was summarised briefly any outstanding event. At the evening, as I said, all these reports were summarised and sent to the brigade for Brigadier General's Trenchard staff to monitor.
Yeah, your job was what? To take down these reports at the switchboard?
Our job was to receive these forms verbally. We had no telegraph. We had no wireless communication. all verbal and wish to write them down on a special army form, a pink form, I forget the number of it now, and wish to take one carbon copy. And that's just to go down either to the equipment section, if it dealt with stores, or to the orderly room, if it dealt with personnel and operations.
Did you have any other duties apart from that?
No. We were on a 13-hour day, we're 13-hour night shift, and 11-hour day shift. We used to start at 8 o'clock in the morning, and finish it in the evening. Let's have a look now. 11 hours. We finish at 5 or 6, change of about 6 o'clock, and then go right through till 8 o'clock the following morning.
Can you tell me what the duty rota was for manning
the, well, the signal staff consisted of four people: a corporal in charge of a class 1 and two second class A mechanics. And during the day, the corporal and one second class A mechanic took over, and they served an 11-hour shift. Then at night time, the other two took over. And these two, when they were on duty, used to alternate with the duties, relieve one another. Writing, going for meals, hand-delivering messages to the various floors. And one man was permanently on the switchboard, sitting there, waiting all the time. And the other fellow was doing all the clerical and message duties.
As a highly trained engineer in this field, did you have to ever leave the chateau to look after the telephone lines, or was that someone else's job?
All the responsibility of the lines was the responsibility of the Royal Engineers, and their men were all geared for external work and putting up poles, putting up wires and things like that. But we were all on the instrument side. We never touched the outside work at all.
Did you have any problems with keeping communications with the other squadrons?
No, we didn't have any problem at all. I can't remember anything happening where we lost contact with any squadron. Sometimes an accident used to occur. You see, they used to use an earth return, and the earth was obtained by attaching a wire to a stone and throwing it into the local duck pond. And if somebody pulled the wire out of the duck pond, you were disconnected. It was simple thing like that, really. But most of the circuits were metallic circuits, that means two wires, but there were cases where there was just an earth return.
Did you have confidence in the Royal Engineers' work?
Well, it so happened that, as I said before, we were skilled men, and the Royal Engineers were army trained men, and consequently, we had the edge on them in that sense, just by circumstances. And if there were any difficulty with a difficult fault, we should help them out with it.
Could you explain what might have happened in those circumstances?
Well, you have an obscure fault that they couldn't locate, and some of these faults you knew by experience what to look for, and they had lacked that experience.
What did you think of them at the time? Were you dismayed that they couldn't do that part of the job?
Oh, they were nice fellows, and we accepted that, and we're just part of the unit, and just accepted that was a normal trend of things, and we never thought anything about it. Well, we got on very well with the Royal Engineers. Obviously, the Royal Engineers got on very well with us.
All right, fine. Thanks very much. Still staying on duty, What was there anything other than the duties you've described to me just now that you could say were part of your duties?
There was nothing in particular, no. We were kept very, very busy on what we had to do. And the only time we had any leisure time was through the night when there was nothing doing. So consequently, we just confined to, limited to what we were doing. We didn't exceed our duties or go beyond our duties in any way.
Could you go through your typical daily routine?
The routine was a rally about 7 o'clock in the morning, and then you had to clear the hut and go down and have a wash and a shave and present yourself at the cookhouse and get your breakfast. And time to report for duty at 8 o'clock. And as you report for duty at 8 o'clock, the two men had been on duty all night, they went down and had breakfast. And in due course, they went and slept.
Who did you report to as being on duty to?
We didn't report to anybody. You knew what you had to do and you just did it. You see, the signal section was very, very small. There was only, in the signal unit we had, there was only four of us in it. Plus two wireless operators, which didn't enter the running of the announcement at all. The wireless operators were just there to receive German broadcasting.
Well, perhaps we could look at their job in a minute. So, at 8 o'clock you would start duty. How long would you stay working at the switchboard for then?
How long?
Would you stay working at the switchboard for?
You would sit on the switchboard for about an hour, 2 hours, and then you get a break. And alternate like that, supposed to.
How long would the break be for?
2 hours.
So it's 2 hours on, 2 hours off throughout the day?
You'd be on the switchboard for 2 hours, and you'd be writing for 2 hours. Just alternate the duty. You didn't get any relief, you just alternated.
So do you have any breaks for food during the course of the day?
Didn't have any breaks during the day. Oh, no, not at all. The staff was very, very limited, you see, it was only two of you. And we hadn't any reliefs at all. If any man went sick, there was no way to take the place.
How would you cope in those circumstances?
Well, you didn't report sick, that's all. I remember we had violent cases of sunburn. The fellows went out in the glare and sun, which they weren't used to, but they still had to report for duty.
Was there a time when someone was so ill that they genuinely couldn't do their work?
Not whilst I was at Fiend Villas. That never happened. We managed to keep fit and go right through. But when we moved, it's just come to my mind, when we moved to later on in the air, we had an extra... we had a thing called a fullerphone installed, which was an instrument, which was a telegraph instrument, which was superimposed upon a telephone line, so that you could conduct a conversation as well as transmit more signals on the same line. And for that we had extra staff. We had we had telegraphists who had been originally in the London Telegraph Office, been called up.
But that came along much later?
That came on the latter part of 1917.
As I was talking about daily routine, when would you finish working on the switchboard and making reports in the course of a day?
What did we do after that?
Yes, well, when would you finish, first of all? What time would you...
Finish about 7 o'clock, 6 or 7 o'clock.
Your duty would end then?
Pardon?
Your duty would end then?
Oh, yes. Finish then.
And then what would happen?
Well, then you went... Perhaps you could go to the local cafe and sit and drink coffee. And go down to the mess room and play dominoes. That's about all you had to do. and it was a very small village, and all the householders, they used to sell coffee, and we used to go to these houses and sit on the, with an earthenware floor, and drink their coffee.
What time would you go to bed?
We usually go to bed, we usually go to bed about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock. I forget, there was a restriction, we had to be in by a certain time, but I can't remember. It wasn't very late though.
Right, fine, thank you very much. Now I'd like to turn to the accommodation, which we've mentioned in passing really, but perhaps we could go into a little bit more detail. Perhaps you could start off with your own accommodation. Whereabouts did you sleep when you were at the chateau?
Well, the accommodation is what you made of it. You were always on the lookout for blankets, and you were always on the lookout for things in which you could make a trestle bed. And if you could, there were bunks originally installed, and the mattress was really, the basis was wire netting. And over a period of months, with the constant friction, the wire netting used to break. And then we found the best form of bed covering was Hessian canvas. And if we could manage to get it, we used to try and get some timber ourselves and obtain some canvas and make our own bunk to sleep on. But that was very difficult. You had to put up with what was available. Often we slept on the floor.
Where would you get the wood from to make a bed?
Well, when the Army Service Corps were operating in the area, they used to always have a dump of stores. And you had an expression in the Army, you never stole anything, you won it. And if something you wanted was somewhere, and you knew where it was, you made an endeavour to get there and win it. And that's what we used to do. We used to partake of the ordnance stores unknown to the people that were controlling them. In other words, we stole them. And that was going on all the time. It was a survival, and you had to exist. And you did what you come to get, come through.
You said you slept on the floor at some time. Did you manage to improve your sleeping accommodation during your stay there?
No. The only accommodation, the best I ever had was a piece of 3x2 in the form of a rectangle and an oblong, and covered with Hessian canvas. Nailed all round, and 2 army blankets, and you used to put your jacket and your trousers and everything underneath, and you used that as a pillow.
Was there any heating in your room?
No heating whatsoever. I can't remember ever having any heating accommodation, never at any time. And no, except when we were on duty in the signal office, we had to. It was very cold, and we used to have a cigarette tin which used to hold 50 fags, and we used to fill it with methylated spirits, and we used to burn these methylated spirits, and the heat from that flame is what was kept it going all night. But it had an unfortunate effect, made you drowsy, and you had to watch it, you had to keep opening the door, let the fresh air in, otherwise you're off. Just an old cigarette tin, and we used to put a match to it, and it was a most primitive and a most dangerous thing. But that never presented itself to us, that aspect. When you're young, you don't think of these things.
What about your own property? You didn't obviously have your own room. Were you in a large a room sharing with other people?
You're in sharing, you were just accommodated yourself and took advantage of the circumstances, bedded down in a particular area, and used that all the time. I've slept in some shocking places. But
no, I'm specifically talking while you were at the chateau.
You had a bunk. You had your own bunk, and you kept to that bunk. Oh, yes, that's perfectly true.
And what about your own personal possessions? Was there anywhere where you could put those?
No. Oh, no. You just had to put them on your bed. And the first personnel were an honest set of fellows. You never lost anything. I could go into that later, but we did have an introduction to the unit by an engineer, and this poor man was a kleptomaniac and he couldn't help it, and he had to collect things. He just couldn't, till we found out what was happening. And then
well, could you tell me about that now then? Was that whilst you were at the chateau?
Yes, this fellow just couldn't resist. This fellow couldn't resist picking up things which were lying about, and he had a mania for collecting, and he had no value for, oh no, he said them at all, until we found out what was happening. Then when we watched the watch him very carefully, it was all right after that.
Did he not dispose of the things he'd taken?
No, he just collected them.
How was he treated by the other men?
They understood it as a form of sickness, and he was quite a nice chap, a very, very nice fellow. It was a form of sickness, and they accepted as such.
So there was no argument?
Oh, no. No, no. Oh, very amiable. We got on very, very well together. Very well together. Most of the personnel, as I said, were along the south part of the country. There's very few northerners in the Royal Flying Corps. Very few northerners.
Well, I'd like to come back to that in a minute, but perhaps if we stay with the area of conditions at the moment. Could you tell me something about your rations whilst you were out?
Rations? Yes, the rations. Our rations. Let's see, we had bread, which was essential. Would you use arrive in Hessian sacks? Dirty old sacks. Hessian bread. And the loaves were three loaves were handed to each table. And I forget how many men, 16 men, was it? I forget how many men at the table. Three loaves were handed, and the loaves were passed down. And they were supposed to take a slice and a half off. But the young fellows were very, very hungry, and if they could get a nice thick slice, used to do it. But the elderly men used to watch them very carefully. I remember, you know, when you're cutting the bread, everybody watching you, so you didn't get exceeding your ration. And then another mainstay was McConaughey's.
Could you say what that was?
McConaughey was a tinned meal. It consisted of potatoes, carrots, meat, and gravy. And you could heat this in more water, and then when you opened it out, you had a hot meal. And then, of course, we had the canteen, and they used to obtain in the canteen tins of carnation milk, and they used to obtain tins of coffee, and we used to go at night time and drink coffee at the canteen. But I can't remember the food was we had meat. I can't remember much about the food except that I've got a note somewhere. Now, the items that were in plentiful supply could be obtained any time and any quantity were bully beef and jam, plum and apple jam, till you got sick of the sight of it. And another ration you got, which was very acceptable, and there was plenty of, was cigarettes. You get 15, 60 cigarettes, and also pipe tobacco, as much as you wanted, really.
Did you smoke?
Very little.
What did you do with your ration then?
The ration I didn't, I gave it to the fellows. Now, the OC, he always had a tin of Abdullah's number 16 on his trestle table, and I'm sorry to say that when the boys went in, they sometimes used to pick an Abdullah number 16 out of his box, and he got them very cheaply at the canteen, of course, and by so doing we became accustomed to Abdullah number 16, and we started smoking Abdullah number 16.
Were they expensive cigarettes?
No, they were very cheap. because when I came home and devolved, I tried to buy them and I found I couldn't purchase them. They're too dear for me. Oh, but we've got smokes on there practically next to nothing. You got a tin of 50 or 25, I'm down to 16 for about a franc or something. And like everything else, if there's a good supply of everything, you're more or less accepted and sometimes wasted.
Was there any other special surprise? You mentioned cigarettes actually as one. Did you get things like rum?
There was a rum ration, and I can't. Yes, I think it was a rum ration, and I didn't like the stuff, and I used to give mine to somebody else. Didn't like it. Didn't like spirits at any time.
Would you say that you had enough food?
We used to get parcels from home. Luxuries and that, yes, we've got plenty of food. Never felt for the lack of it.
You'd say your rations were adequate in quantity.
Oh, the rations, when we were at the wing headquarters, we always had plenty of food. Now, I have no recollection of ever doing without food.
Hmm. You mentioned that the some of the younger lads would try and sneak a bit of extra bread and so on.
Yeah.
Well, you must have been one of the younger lads at that time.
I had a good appetite, and if I could quietly make a nice thick slice, I used to do so. It's quite a job because the knives were very blunt, and in the process of doing that, you used to hack the loaf to pieces sometimes.
What was the quality of the food that you got?
The bread.
Well, our food generally, but the bread, if you like.
Generally speaking, was reasonably good. We had no black bread, or we had no substitutes, to my knowledge. Of course, being in a wing headquarters, we were lucky. If I'd been in infantry, and that where Russians were better, we had to come down, and facilities for providing them were difficult, it was a different matter. But we were headquarters, and we were a very fortunate set of fellows. We were.
Do you know where the food came from?
Adjacent, or we'll say in the vicinity of each unit, there was a headquarters, an Army Service Corps headquarters, which supplied gun material, personnel material, and food, flour, sugar, salt, beef, bread, everything. All the food was supplies from the depot in the Army Service Corps, which was situated in a neighbouring large town.
And that would come down very regularly. Every day would that come down?
And we had Crossley tenders, painted green, I remember them. They used to go every day for the rations and bring the bread back and bring a tank back for water.
Oh, I was going to ask you about water. What was the quality of the water that you received?
The water, of course, we had the local wells, and the local people. We used to, on one occasion, we dropped a bucket in the well and caused a difficulty. And after that, we weren't allowed to use the local wells. But sometimes we did use the wells and get some well water. But we never drank it. We always had to boil it.